It's a beautiful day in Southern California, and we've come to beautiful suburban Burbank. We're sitting on a patio next to some beautiful orange trees at the home of Candy Candido. And Candy, thank you for having us here today.
Well, it's a pleasure, believe me, just a pleasure. I'm only puzzled about one thing. I'm looking at this young girl you're with. You say she's your wife.
That's my wife.
Well, boy, boy, Chicago people are lucky.
Do all right, huh? Well, you've done all right, too. You told me you were married over 55 years, is that right?
Well, now 56 years.
Wow. Well, and you were a child groom and a child bride, I bet. Huh?
Well, we're both 18 years old in New Orleans, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Italian people, you know. Her folks thought she could do better, and my folks thought I could do better. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know I loved this girl, you know. So I found out that there was a fellow named Gene Austin was in town. Mm-hmm. So I told this little girl, my little girl, I said, if I get a job with Gene Austin, would you marry me? She said, sure. So a fellow named Coco, whose name is he had a funny name. Coco, Otto Heimel was his name. Mm-hmm. And we both went down to this club where Gene Austin was working, and we auditioned for him out in the car because I couldn't take my bass fiddle out of my mother's car, you know.
You couldn't take it out of the car?
Well, either he liked us or he didn't like us, you know. So he came out. And he says, I said, what do you want to hear? He says, can you play My Blue Heaven? I said, what key? He says, well, I'll sing it. So he starts singing, we start playing. We played about 8 bars, and he liked it. So he made us come inside, we went inside, and he signed us to a contract, $20 a week for 5 years. I said, wait a minute. Make it 25, and we'll take it. Big business. And I said, but there's one more other problem I've got. I can't join you because I don't want to leave this little girl. You help us get married and we'll join you. He says, okay. So I tell my little wife about it. We make the plans and we go to a little town called Kenner and we got married. Mm-hmm. Right from Kenner, we had to go to WWL, which is a radio station in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And I told Gene, be sure don't say that I got married because my daddy will kill you and everybody else around here. My daddy was 6'2", built like a gorilla. Mm-hmm. I'm short like my mother was. But he didn't listen to me right on the program. He says, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a surprise for you. My little bass player, who will put a solo next, just got married to one of the most beautiful girls in New Orleans, Anita Bivona. Meantime, my daddy is at home explaining to my dad, my uncle, Tator from New York. He says, when you hear the boom a boom, and that's when my boy, he plays the bass a while. So my daddy hears that, he picks up the radio, he says, I catch you, I broke your leg, and he throws the radio against the wall.
Oh my.
My mother passes out, I grab my little wife and my bass fiddle, run out, go right to a Western Union, and send my dad a letter on our way to Biloxi, which is 125 miles from New Orleans. But we didn't go there. We went right to Gene Austin's house. Okay. 9 months to the date. Now, we played all over one-night stands. Now, Gene Austin didn't know I could sing. And we were in some town in North Carolina. I think it was Raleigh, North Carolina. North Carolina. And he gets laryngitis, and he can't sing. Mm-hmm. So I told him, I said, let me go out and do something. And he laughed, you know. But he let me go out, and I went out there, and I killed a half hour for him, singing the song. So he kept that in the show.
What did you sing? What songs were you singing?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some of the tapes of the songs I have, and which one you like, you can play for your audience.
Absolutely perfect.
Okay, wonderful. Good. And now, my wife now is 8.5 months pregnant. I can say that on your program.
Yeah, we can say that.
Okay.
Couldn't have said that 30 years ago on radio, but today you can say it.
So we wind up, we're in Washington, D.C., and Gene's already in New York. We're going to open up at the Roxy Theater. Now, I can't leave my little wife. And December the 11th at 9 o'clock in the morning, she had this little baby boy. And it was Washington, D.C. Now he's 55 and he's a lawyer. Like that. So I get a maid for my little wife, and I go to New York. I do the week there with in the show. Then I came back, and my wife and I and a little baby, we drove down to New Orleans. And we get there, and my daddy's still mad at me. So I kiss him on the cheek, and I says, "Everything all right with you, Dad?" He's all right with me. He says, "You make your bed, and I'll butt it." All backwards, like an Italian, you know. Well, the family became very close. Then we came out here to Los Angeles. And first picture we made was a thing called Merry Fairy Go Round. It was Betty Grable's first picture.
Well, wait, now let's stop a second here. How did you get into movies from all this?
With Gene Austin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
With Gene Austin, Candy,
okay.
And Coco. We were the world's most popular trio. Of course, it was Gene Austin. It wasn't Candy and Coco, you know, because he was the Bing Crosby of that day.
Absolutely.
When I watched him in shows, when he used to sing, "You came to me from out of nowhere," and I see the women fainting in the audience, I couldn't believe it, you know. I'd look at my little wife. If she'd have fainted, I'd have punched her in the nose. So I stayed with Gene about, maybe 8 or 9 months, and I quit. Because he wasn't giving me enough money. I had this little baby, and we could hardly live. So he told me, he says, "You think you can do better, kid?" He says, "Go ahead." So I put a skate at the bottom of my bass fiddle, and I went down to a hotel down here called the Cecil Hotel on Main Street, where everybody looked like that, you know. And I used to play for tips and sing songs for tips. And it was raining one night. Two guys came in because they couldn't ride in the rain. They parked the car right in front of the hotel. And I saw they were nice dressed, so I walked over to them. I said, "Can I play you a song for a tip?" He said, "Sure." So I started to play a little thing. He said, "Wait a minute, can you play with a bow?" I said, "That costs you a dollar." So he gives me the dollar. I grabbed the bow out of my back pocket. I had a French bow. And I played Elegy. Bah, 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 you know? He says, "Here's my card. Come up and see me tomorrow." I told my little wife about it. I didn't know who the guy was. The next day, I went out to see him, and I signed a contract for $150 a week for a year. He wanted 7 years, but I wouldn't take it. I said, $150 a week, and that's it. 1 year. So I opened up 2 days later with Ted Fiorita and his orchestra at the Paramount Theater here. And he didn't know I could sing either.
Now, that was Ted Fiorita who gave you the dollar tip, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. I hope you're following my story.
I'm following, but you didn't mention his name.
No, I don't. No purpose. Because the moment I said Ted Fiorita, you'd start thinking of Muzzy Marcellino, Leif Erickson, and everybody else. Because he started a lot of stars, you know.
Absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
And he was a Lawrence Welk of that name. Well, I traveled all around the country with this little boy we've got. And, I think I was with Ted for about 5 or 6 years, and I left him. Because my wife didn't want to travel anymore. And I stayed out here, and I'm doing pictures, and I'm working at a club called Charlie Foy's. Seven Little Foy's?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Foy had a beautiful club out here. On this show was Gleason. All big comics in those days.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't big those, you know. So I get a call from a guy named Ben Pollock. You know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the Crosby Band.
Yeah.
And I joined him. Fiorita found out that I was back with the band. He sends me a wire, and he wants to hire me again. So I threw a price at him, $750 a week while I don't work. I get it. And I meet him in Memphis, Tennessee, my wife and little boy and I, okay? As we walked into the Peabody Hotel, there's a big picture of me, 6 feet by 4 feet. you know, mm-hmm. starring in Fiorita's band. So I call up my mother and dad to tell them to get on the bus from New Orleans and come up to see me. Mm-hmm. So they came up to see me. And they stayed a couple of days and they left. Now I get a knock on the door one morning. The manager and Fiorita, they're screaming, somebody stole my picture. They think I took it. I don't know. And it cost the guy $200 to make another picture. Uh-huh. We were there for 3 months. Well, anyway, maybe another 8 months passed. I had some time off, so my wife and I drive down to New Orleans. As I opened the front door of our home, there was my picture. My daddy stole it and rode all the way back home.
Isn't that nice, though?
I mean,
that's a wonderful remembrance to think beautiful. That how proud your dad must have been of you.
I'm just so sorry that I still live so they can see my 8 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh. What a large family.
So anyway, 9 years later, uh-huh. to the date, well, it wasn't to the date, it was January the 21st, we were in Mexico City. It was January the 20th, and we had to rush back because my wife gave birth to a little boy mm-hmm. who was named Nino. Now, he's a prop master here in pictures. Hmm. I guess he has a name on a lot of titles.
Any particular studio, or has he worked for all different?
No, he's a freelance. Uh-huh. And prop masters who work for studios don't make much money, but prop masters who freelance make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I should know. mm-hmm. So, remember, that was 9 years from other little boy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to the beginning. When I was 12 years old, I had a little band called Candy and His Jumpin' Jacks. And in the band was a guy named Ayers Lamar, who became a very big name in the band business. Louis Prima. Mm-hmm. He became Wingy Manone.
Oh, my.
All
yeah.
kids, all right? And we got a job for a matinee at the Sanger Theater. Now, this was a Dixieland band. And the manager of the Sanger Theater decided he'd like to have a little girl on the show. So he gets a little girl with a yellow dress with a violin. Who ever heard of a violin in a Dixieland band? I didn't like it. It was my band. Okay? So she's playing the poor kid the whole half hour we work and nothing's coming out. I soaked her bow. Okay? I went back. Now I'm going back to after our second boy was born, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm still with Fiorita and we're in Cincinnati. We're opening up a brand new hotel. I can't remember the name. Ayers Lamar comes up to see me after the date's over about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he comes up because they gave us a suite. And we're talking. He says, hey, Candy. He says, you remember that little girl in our first band when you soaked her bow? You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My wife comes running out of the room. And he says, oh, God, don't tell me that's who you married. I said, that's right. She didn't talk to me for 3 months. Imagine it took her 9 years to move.
All 19. Those years, huh? She didn't realize.
No.
And you're still married, though.
Still married. Of course, she reminds me of that practically every day. Okay. Now, 9 years later, mm-hmm. of course, I've been doing pictures and everything else. 9 years later.
Now, what are you doing in the pictures? You're playing in bands? You're
acting, playing, singing, acting. Everything.
What kind of pictures are we talking about? What were some of the pictures in that period of time?
Oh, it's Sadie McKee, Only Angels Have Wings with Cary Grant. Sadie McQueen had Joan Crawford. Roberta, Fred Astaire. Mm. In fact, I'll give you a list of them and you could read them out.
Right? Okay, all right.
I'm going to tell you, my brain's only that big.
Got a nice memory here.
And I'm trying to think of this story.
Okay, go ahead.
So we're in Canada. We come back from Canada. It's 9 years later from our other son, Nino. A little girl was born right here in Burbank. Her mm-hmm. name is Flora. She's 37 now, and she's got 2 children. That's the one with the little boy who put his hand in the osterizer, whatever
you
call it.
Oh, my. He's okay now.
Yeah. So Remember, 9 years, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now my wife don't want to travel at all anymore. So I had to come here, come back, and this, we bought this home.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry. We bought this home in 44. Raised all our children here.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a job here at the Florentine Gardens, which is a tremendous nightclub. And I stayed there for 4 or 5 years. Two guys come over the house, and they said, Mr. Jimmy Durante wants you on his show. Now, I don't know who Jimmy Durante is, because I never listened to radio in those days. I was either playing bass or doing club acts and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I says, how much will he pay? He says, scale, $250. I says, he don't want me. He says, what do you mean? Jimmy Durante is the biggest show on the air. I says, I don't care. It's the only thing I've got to sell is my voice. He says, how much you want? I says, $750. He says, we'll talk to him. He come back 2 days later. He says, he wants you. I says, what do they want me to do? He says, well, there's a little poem. In fact, we'll read it to you. In fact, I'll tell you what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Durante is saying, he says, how do you like that? He's all these gals with these long dresses. You don't see legs no more unless you eat chicken.
I says, I can tell you about a little poem.
He says, you can? He says, tell me.
I said, girls are wearing their dresses longer,
and legs they do not show. So now instead of whistling, I'm feeling mighty low. So, I was on it for the first week only, right? He got 50,000 letters, wanted to know how Jimmy was doing those voices. They thought Jimmy was doing it. So they hired me back. And I stayed with Jimmy. I did 127 radio shows with him. Then when he went on TV, I did 80 TV shows with him. And in fact, we became good friends until he passed away. Well, we went to... No, I'm getting ahead of my story. 2 years after my first little girl was born, we went to Rome, Italy. In fact, Jimmy Durante, the whole show, went over to play the Palladium.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were there, Jimmy comes up to me, because I was the only Catholic in the group. Everybody was either Shapiro, Ginsburg, you know, Burnett, and Eddie Jackson, and the only Catholic. So Jimmy says, hey, kid, I want you to come with me. I said, where are we going? He said, the Pope wants to see me. I says, all right. Now, the Pope didn't even know his name. All he knew him by was Snozzola.
Ah, mm-hmm.
So, we went up there. Now, like we're sitting here, Ellen is the Pope, we'll say.
Okay.
You, Jimmy Durante.
Mm-hmm.
I'm me. And he had an interpreter over there who never talked. Because the Pope spoke pretty good broken English. It was Pope Pius the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Pius the What a memory I've got, huh? So while we're talking, the Pope says to Jimmy, he says, who's him? Talking about me. And Jimmy says, Your Honor, instead of Your Holiness, you know. He says, Your Honor, this is a funny kid. He's got a verse like you've never heard. He says, Candy, sing him a song. So without no music or anything, I sang him a song about two little pussycats, a big one and a little, you know. Only 16 bars, and I stopped. The Pope looked at me. He reached in a little basket and brought a ring out and gave me a ring. He reached in the basket and gave Jimmy a ring, and he blessed my throat, and that's the ring he gave me. I've never taken it off my hand.
Oh, wonderful. Isn't
it's a crucifix
marvelous.
With a diamond. Isn't that beautiful?
It certainly is.
I'm afraid to show it to Ellen. She's a lovely woman.
No, that's marvelous. That's a marvelous ring. And what a
until
great
Durante
story.
Durante died. He says he meant that one for me. Now, this beautiful, we went over on the Queen Mary and came back on the Queen Elizabeth. Of course, it was very romantic. And about 6 months later, our second daughter was born. 9 years, 9 years, 9 years, 2 years. It's a good thing I've never taken my wife to the tiles of an island. Okay, so my wife didn't want me to travel at all anymore. I said, baby, I sing funny songs and I play bass fiddle. They think I'm very good on the bass fiddle. She says, well, why don't you go to Disney's? Look, there's a green sheet. He's looking for different voices. Well, I wouldn't give her the satisfaction. I always made believe I was the boss, you know. And she said I was the boss, and then she laughed. I don't know why. So I went over to Disney Studios and walked in the casting office. And the guy looked at me. He says, Candido, what are you doing here? I says, how do you know my name? He says, well, I used to manage Paul Whiteman. My name's Jack Lavin. And we tried to hire you one time from Fiorita, but he wanted $30,000 for your contract. How do you like that, huh?
Ah, $30,000.
Yeah. So he says, what are you doing here, Candy? I said, well, here's the green sheet. You're looking for some different voices. He says, hey, can you do a raven? Well, I thought the guy was pulling my leg. Well, a musician knows about a raven. I said, you pull my leg, I'll pull his. I said, what do you want, the male or the female? He says, you mean there's two? I said, sure, the female does all the talking, the male never does nothing. He says, no joke. He says, how's it go? So from the top of my voice, went, ah! He says, go see the producer. So we walk clear across the lot, and there's a guy with the big black rimmed glasses, a little tam, a yes man sitting on this side, and a yes man sitting on that side. And he's walked through the door. He says, what do you want, Jack? He says, I got Candy Candido over here. He does the raven, and he tells me that, he says, incidentally, he says, the female does all the talking, the male never does nothing. Shook this guy up, too. So he says, let's hear it, Candido. So I top him up with, ah! He's all by that. I've been with the studio ever since, 33 years.
Holy smoke.
Of course, I'm not with them now, because that was 33 years. That's about three years ago that I left there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did an awful lot of voices for Disney over the years.
Bunch of them.
Refresh our memory.
Peter Pan was just beautiful. I did the Indian Chief. Of course, you've got to see it to appreciate it. That's the only trouble with the radio. You can't see my kiss. I'm me talking to you. No?
And that's the radio listener's loss. But you see, the radio listener has the opportunity to use his imagination, he gets the picture that you create.
Great in those days. Yeah. You know? But still, my face is something to look at, you know. I'd like you to play this tape that I did on the Louisiana Hayride and see hear the laughs that I get just my kisser, you know. Because, going back after we made Sadie McKee, with Gene Austin then, the director was named Clarence Brown. He got me on the side. He says, you know, son, if you ever want to get in pictures, I'd like to handle you personally. He says, because I think you're a born comedian. So when I quit Gene Austin, that's the first guy I went to see.
Clarence Brown.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And Clarence Brown told me, he says, Candy, I can't do nothing with you. He says, look, everybody in town's got a wire from Gene Austin. If anybody attempts to use Candy Candido, he's under legal contract to me, I'll sue. So that's
But I thought he released you.
Yeah, he sure did. That's when I put the skate at the bottom of the bass fiddle. In fact, my wife and I, for about 3 months, we ate off of soup bunches off the tips that I made down there. So now I'm on the Jimmy Durante show, and I get a call from a guy in Dallas named E.O. Stacy. He's with MCA, an agent. And he says, Mr. Candido, after you met me, never called me Mr. Candido.
I have to tell you, it's very hard to call you Mr. Candido. You're the kind of a person that you want to call by his first name instantly.
Good, thank you. Thank
Candy.
You. So Chuck, he says, I'd like to hire you for about a month down here. He says, to do shows in and around Dallas. I says, how much does it pay? And he told me, I says, oh, you got to be kidding. I make more than that on one Durante show. He says, how much would you like? So I told him, I want $1,000 a night for a show. In those days, that was a lot of money. So we're talking about 46 and 47.
Yes.
So he said, I'll get back to you. So he got back to me in about 2 weeks, and I drove down there. Instead of staying a month with him, I stayed 2 months and came back with $50,000. And he was my agent until maybe 8 years ago when he had a stroke. Real one of them. Of course, he's a very big man in those days. And he started the thing where I became a goodwill ambassador for practically all the state fairs around the United States. Mm-hmm. And Minneapolis, St. Paul, that's your big fair, Columbus, and Salt Lake City, all of them. Mm-hmm. Now I'm only down to two now because I'm kind of retiring now.
Taking it easy now. Mm-hmm.
So, but I still go to Allentown, Pennsylvania. This makes my 31st year I'm going back as an MC and a Goodwill Ambassador. And Shreveport, Louisiana, those two I still kept.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going back again. Of course, I'll be emceeing Willie Nelson. Alabama's on the show. Every night a different star.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of kick out of that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Just love it. Yeah. Oh, if I retire completely, I'd die. Because I've got to entertain, you know. That's my life. Okay?
Okay. Now, we want to take a short break.
All right.
And then I want to talk to you.
Yeah, don't you have any commercials on your show?
No, we never have commercials. That's the beauty of this, Candy. We can just go roll along without having to interrupt for a lot of business.
That's great.
But we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk more about the Jimmy Durante Show.
Okay.
We're talking with Candy Candido in his backyard in Burbank, Illinois. And there, as you described it, while we took the short break, there are two orange trees back here and
a lemon tree,
a plum, and another plum.
Hmm? No, apricot.
Apricot.
Don't you have trees in Chicago?
No, we just have...
No kidding.
Nothing.
Just wind, right?
In Chicago, you couldn't find many people who would know an apricot tree, Candy. I guarantee you that. You had a fantastic career, which continues to this day.
Yeah, God was good to me, believe me.
I'm sure. And you know, I want to tell you that as you were relating events in your showbiz life, everything was based on your family. This happened when this child was born, this next event happened 9 years later when the next one was born, and so forth and so on. And I think that's really nice. It certainly shows that you are a super family man and that you love your family. And how many grandchildren now, did you say?
Eight grandchildren.
Three great-grandchildren.
And as I was telling you, I've got one little grandson that lives in Westport, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our youngest daughter, who is 35 now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And his name is Gibby.
Gibby?
Yeah, he's named after his other grandfather.
So. Oh, uh-huh.
And he calls me his magnificent grandfather.
Well, he knows talent and class when he sees it, I think.
And I teach him little routines, you know. Like I taught him a little thing. I says, tell me, how's your mother? And he says, oh, she's not feeling well, grandfather. She sees spots in front of her eyes. I said, she see a doctor? He says, no, only spots. All little jokes like that.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, and I put him on the stage with me.
Did you?
Oh, he's adorable.
Yeah?
Just adorable.
You met Jimmy Durante in 46.
Six.
When someone... Now, who was it that came to you? Was it a scout for the program or a talent?
No, two writers. A guy named Jack Ellis and another one. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember his name. It's a long time ago, you know, for me anyway. And that was... Gary Moore was also on the show with Durante.
And Phil Cohan was the producer.
Luke
director.
Yeah, Phil Cohan. You're right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Lou Cohan was Jimmy Durante's, like a sidekick, you know. He had one arm. A very wealthy man, but he loved Durante. Mm-hmm. Everybody loved Durante.
Everybody did. That's what I want to ask you about. Working with Jimmy Durante every week for quite a number of years then. All through what was it?
Almost.
Camel and Rexall. Rexall. Even after Gary Moore left the show.
Oh, yes, yes.
You were still involved. Arthur Treacher, Peggy Lee, and all the others came in on the program.
Arthur Treacher used to come over here all the time because he loved my wife's cooking.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he was a beautiful man, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, bunch of them. And on the show, we had the greatest stars in the world on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sinatra was real thin when I first worked with him on the show.
Yeah,
he was a real nice guy. All of them were wonderful to me. I don't know why, but they all were wonderful. And I'll never forget one show. We opened up the NBC TV studio here in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
Durante was the first show.
The first TV show to come out of there. Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, we were going to England, in about 4 or 5 months. So the writers wrote around that.
Mm-hmm.
And Durante, opening scene, he comes in and he sees the trunks with England on it, you know? And he says, "What dummy wrote England on it?" I says, "I did." He says, "Stupid, we're going to London." And just then the guy comes in there, and Durante says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm the doctor, Mr. Durante. I come to give you your berry, berry shots." He says, "Okay, Candy, you go first and warm up the needle." And I says, "No way, he's not going to touch me with that needle." And I run up. I was pretty strong in those days. I used to run up a wall to a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran up about 15 feet.
Mm.
And Durante's screaming, "Is come on down and take it like a man, you know. No, you'll never touch me with that needle." So the doctor says, "Don't worry about it, Mr. Durante. I've run across cases like that." And he takes out a needle with a telescope on it, you know. And as he does that, the scenery gives away.
Oh, my gosh.
And I fall, and the scenery falls. Well, it was a five-minute laugh. He was supposed to say, "How you feeling?" after he gave me the needle, mm-hmm. you know. And I was supposed to say, "I'm feeling mighty low." So after the show, Durante called me in his dressing room. He says, "Kid, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen." And the bigger, he said, "But you know something? You'll never do it again." He said, "Remember, the toughest thing in the world is to get on the top of the ladder. But even tougher than that is staying up there, because guys like you will knock me down." Yeah, he was wonderful to me. I used to pick him up every day because he didn't like to drive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take him to rehearsal, take him to the show.
Well, that must have been fairly easy for you living here in Burbank when you were doing television right over at NBC
right.
Burbank.
And I had to drive all the way to Beverly Hills to pick him up.
Pick him up. Huh? Not easy, then. But when you were doing radio with Jimmy, you were probably doing it out of the NBC studios at Sunset and Vine. That was the old...
Well, the first one was on CBS.
CBS. That was...
It was on...
Camel Caravan back then.
That was on Sunset and...
Well, that was just...
Gower.
Yeah, just a little bit, a couple blocks away from
mm-hmm,
Vine
NBC.
Street. Yeah.
And that NBC was one of the most beautiful buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It just tore me up when they tore it down.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
put a loan... Savings and loan up there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. When you would do the radio show, now, basically, and this is really a testimonial to your comic ability and your talent, you would do, I've heard many of these Rexall shows, for example, you would really just have a very small part in a 30-minute show. You would come in and do this little gag and feeling mighty low up there in the sky and so forth.
Well, no,
that was pretty much it, wasn't it?
No, I did a lot of other voices you wouldn't recognize, but you recognize the distinct voices. I do the high one and the middle
mm-hmm.
one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a lot of voices, like a tough guy would come in and I would use the gravel voice like that, you know. Nobody would know it was
mm-hmm.
me.
So you were throughout the show, but we were unaware that it was you.
I did one of his girlfriends one week because one of the gals was sick. Mrs. Matarazza. You remember that?
I think I do.
Yeah, he had a girlfriend by the name of Mrs. Matarazza, and I had to do her because the gal who did it once was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Matarazza means? Wet mattress in Italian. See, Chuck, I'm also giving you an education.
I thought it was a topping on a pizza, but that's something else, isn't it?
I'll never forget one show. Sinatra was on this show. It was a TV show. And the writers came over to me and says, "Candy, in this one scene, you're a barber. And Durante and Sinatra come through the door at the same time, and they both say, 'I'm next,' you know? And you tell him, said, 'Don't worry.' And you turn the chairs around and put both heads together this way and cut both of their hairs at the same time." He says, "Now we need a joke. Can you come up with a joke?" So I thought about it in a couple of hours and I called him. And I told them the joke, and they liked it. Now, you know, yeah, there's a script reading before you do a show. You know that. Mm-hmm. And all the people, all the performers sit around. So, comes to the line, then the joke that I gave them. And I look at Durante. I said, don't worry, Mr. Durante. I says, I'll never touch your eyebrows. It's the only dependable...
Little breeze came by, yeah, knocked something
beautiful
down.
Breeze back,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, nice stuff.
And it's most probably 98 degrees with 89 humidity back in Chicago.
It is,
right?
It is.
I says, don't worry, Mr. Durante, I'll never cut your eyebrows. It's the only dependable hair you've got. Now we do a rehearsal, and you got to revive script.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the script while we're reading, and I don't see my joke there no more. And Durante grabs my hair, and he says, don't you ever touch my eyebrows. It's the only dependable hair I've got. He's got the joke.
Oh, he gets the gag.
So I look at the writers, you know, and they did this. He's the boss, you know. And they sent me a box of $20 cigars.
Yeah.
But we had some beautiful shows. I'll never forget one show. Lily Pons was on the show. Mm-hmm. And my mother was here with me, and she was dying of cancer. So I went up to Lily Pons, and I explained that my mother thought she was the greatest thing in the world. Would you come over and visit her? So during lunch hour, she came over here to visit. Now, my wife claims that nothing ever shakes her up. So Lily came over, and she's talking to my mother and talking to my wife, you know.
Mm.
So my wife comes in, she's going to make a salad for Lily, you know. And she's sprinkling the cheese all over the salad, you know, the Italian cheese. And you know what it was? It wasn't Italian cheese. It was Comet.
Oh, Comet cleanser.
Yeah.
And if Lily Pons had that salad, we'd never heard from her again, I suppose.
Well, what a wonderful lady she was. Oh, in fact, I've never met a bad star between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
Never met a bad star. You know, you still want to talk about Durante?
Talk about anything you like. Sure, talk about Durante. I want to find out about Jimmy if you ever learned who Mrs. Calabash was.
Well, that's something he begged us all not to say, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've never broken my promise
to him.
Well,
then I won't ask you to do that.
I'll tell you how it happened, Mrs. Calabash. We were in a depot coming back. You see, Jimmy would never fly. He took the train all the
mm-hmm.
time. And the stopover was in Chicago, where you switch trains.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy would all go to the newsstand, buy cigars, magazines. And this gal taps him on the shoulder. And he says, hello. And she says, you don't remember me, do you? She says, my name is such and such, you know. She says, but this is my husband. I'm Mrs. Calabash now. Now, that's all I can tell you. And we all met her.
Oh, no kidding. In Chicago.
So don't let anybody tell you it wasn't a Mrs. Calabash. A lot of people say that it was his ex-wife. Her name was Jean.
Yeah.
And if everybody asks about who was Mrs. Calabash.
Oh, sure, I'm sure, yeah.
And the funny part about that, you know, it came out on the show. You know how the director behind the glass in radio days would give you the stretch mark, stretch it,
yes.
Or either put their finger on the nose,
yeah,
right on the nose,
right.
Or rush it up.
Speed it up. Mm-hmm.
Well, on this one show after we came back from New York, Durante was at the end, and the director's stretch it, you know. So, Durante's looking at the script. There's no more words on it. He says, well, good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. I hope your cold is better. And the director's right on the nose. Because comes off. The director says to him, he says, who the devil is Mrs. Calabash? He says, I come up with all these gems. He got nothing but mail from who is Mrs. Calabash. And he got about 200 letters from Mrs. Calabash's himself with their pictures. This is a true story. That's the truth.
And that's where it started.
He couldn't leave it off the air.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
And you know how the lights came down
on
the TV
when he's
show?
Walking
huh?
off, yeah. Uh-huh.
That was an accident.
It was?
Yeah. The spotlight went off. Mm-hmm. And what a couple of the guys at the top, you know, with the lights on mm-hmm. the refs, mm-hmm. they start shining on him like this wherever he was, you know. And the director liked it. And he kept it on.
Some of the best effects, the best gimmicks, the best things that accidentally happen like that. Did you ever have any radio accidents? Did you ever come do any flubs or bloopers in your role on that show or others?
No, I can't remember anything that ever happened that... No, I can't really. Nothing that ever happened that I can remember. Can't think of one.
Well, that's good. It was picture perfect then most of the time. Did you do any other radio, Candy?
Well, Gene Autry mm-hmm. had his radio show then, remember?
Sure, the Melody Ranch.
Uh-huh. And I was on it for 12 weeks because Pat Buttram was shot out of a cannon in one of their pictures and broke his back.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was a little boy next door whose voices would change every time I talked. You know, my voice would... And I'd drive Gene Autry crazy with it. And it was on for 12 weeks, then Pat Buttram came back.
Do you remember what period of time that was? About, you know, what year that might have been?
No. See, that's what I say.
I know, it's
if
a blur.
Smart,
well, I understand. You know, we're talking about 40 years ago, too.
I was also on Eve Arden's first show.
Were you?
Yeah, not Mrs. Brooks. Or Miss Brooks, no.
No, she was involved with...
She had another show.
Yeah, I think it was the Village Store, Seal Test Village Store or something like that.
And I'll never... Mm-hmm. Reese, the opera star, what's her name?
Reese Stevens?
Reese Stevens. Mm-hmm. She was a guest star. And... she says to Eve Arden, she says, oh, Eve Arden says, I hope you will honor us with a little song, you know. And she's better than that. She says, I brought my protege with me, little Candy Candido, and I'd like him to sing a song for you. So right away, I did a thing like, all kind of, and she says, Yvonne says, what is he doing? And Mrs. Stevens says, oh, he's just warming up. She says, sounds like he's falling apart. It was a very cute show. I did quite a few shows with her. There was a nice lady, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she could deliver a line better than anybody I've ever heard, except my wife, when she's mad at me.
Now, your wife never appeared in any facet of show business.
Just been a mother all her life. Uh-huh. And she
That's
likes
a pretty
real
important
estate.
Job. Yeah. She likes real estate. Yeah. Do you recall working with Durante, primarily was it radio and television? We were with Jimmy Durante.
Radio first and television.
Yeah. Do you recall any trips that you made? Did you travel with him to anything? Did you do anything outside of radio or television with Jimmy?
Well, like the Palladium in London, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and I worked... the Copacabana with him in New York.
You ever worked the Chez Paris?
In Chicago? Oh, yes, yeah. Indeed. Sure, did I work the Chez Paris. And that was a great place. We mm-hmm. used to live at the Drake Hotel all the time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, I used to love Chicago. I worked in Chicago before you were born, right?
Did you?
Well, almost. It'll be 75 Christmas Day. Mm. And the first time I was in Chicago was with Ted Fiorita in 1934.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we worked the Edgewater Beach.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't buy an aspirin. This man was so popular. It was that boardwalk was just beautiful.
Oh,
the Edgewater Beach, the boardwalk. Oh, why did they break that up?
They do a lot of things, you know. Can't understand it. Yeah.
That was a monument there. Yeah. It was just mm-hmm. great. We used to love Chicago. I'll never forget. I'll tell you a little story about Chicago. You want to keep talking, right?
Sure.
How long was your show?
We do 4 hours.
Oh, well, okay. Now we're in Chicago, and I'm with Fiorita. We're mm-hmm. at the Edgewater Beach. Now, this is another year. We're at the State and Lake.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And
Balvin and Katz.
Mm-hmm. And we're living in a little apartment, my wife and I and little boy, who's now the lawyer. Mm-hmm. So I need a haircut. So I walk into this little shop on Clark Street. And this bald-headed guy, he's got somebody in the chair. And he looks at me, and he looks at me funny. Oh, and he tells the guy, he says, okay, you finish, you get out there. So he comes up to me, he says, hey, boy, your name, your daddy's name is Tete. I said, that's right. I said, how do you know? He says, I'm going to school in Italy with your dad. He says, he doesn't know how to write his name. I'm going to write his name on his passport when he comes to the United States. Mm-hmm. I said, no joke. So he wouldn't give me a haircut. He took me in the back room. He broke up some bread with a piece of salami. And we ate and we talked. Mm-hmm. And he told me the whole story. Okay?
Of how your dad got to this country?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean anything. The next part of the story would mean
okay.
something. Now, this is years later. And I'm at Charlie Foy's. Fiorita had a band boy by the name of Seymour Heller, mm-hmm. and who later became Liberace's manager. Mm-hmm. Okay? He's still his manager until he died. Now, Seymour Heller came in with this bald-headed guy, and he says, Candy, I want you to meet the next star. He says, Frankie Lane. I said, no kidding, how are you, Frankie? And he says, you're not the Candido of my daddy met. You came into his barber shop in Chicago, got a haircut. I says, yeah, but his name wasn't Lane. His name was LaVecchia. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's how I met Frankie Lane.
For heaven's sakes.
Now, we've become very great friends, Frankie and I. So Frankie calls me and tells me that his dad is coming out here. I says, good. We just moved my dad out here. So my dad, we went over to Frankie's house. He was living in here, near Burbank then. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And his dad was back in Chicago. Okay, July the 5th, my dad dies.
Oh.
Never got to meet his old boyfriend again.
Dear.
That was one meeting I would have liked to see.
Oh, that would have been wonderful.
Now, before talking about, I was on a picture with Duran. He called the Great Rupert. Mm-hmm. It's a real cute picture. You mm-hmm. want to see it. And I had brought my dad out from New Orleans. And I said, Dad, I'm on a picture with Jimmy Durante. You want to come with me? He said, sure, got nothing to do here. So we walk into the studio. I can hear Durante talking up to the makeup person, you know. And I said, Jimmy, when you finish, I'd like you to meet my dad. He said, be a pleasure. Jimmy comes out and he puts his hand out. My daddy don't put his hand out. My daddy puts his finger on his nose, on Durante's nose. He said, hey, why don't you give him my son more work on your radio show? He says, he's got more talent than the dirt in his fingernail, and you got your whole nose.
Oh,
right then and there, Durante fell in love with my dad, because his dad was the same way in Italy.
Yeah.
You know? Man, you could have scraped me off the floor.
Oh, I bet, I bet.
I said, man, I'm through in show business. You know? See, my dad didn't know I was doing other voices, you know.
See, so neither did I. So now we're even. It's really been a pleasure to chat with you. Candy, is Candy your given
That's
first name?
Candy Baptist Candido. And say that Baptist soft because I'm a Catholic.
Okay. It's so nice of you to have invited us over to talk about your really great career. And I think it's a real pleasure for me to, and my wife too, to have been.
You sure that's your wife,
Chuck?
That's
my wife. Yeah.
Not your daughter?
Not my daughter. Thanks a lot, pal. I want to also thank you on behalf of all the folks who listened to you on the Durante Show and saw you on the TV and in so many other things for bringing a lot
Before
of pleasure
you sign
to all
off,
of us.
You know you met only one Gassman?
Yes, right, from Spurdvac. Right?
You didn't meet
I talked to both of them. Yeah.
Oh, you talked to John and
John
Larry.
John and Larry, right.
They are beautiful people.
Wonderful
aren't
guys,
they?
Yeah.
These folks, the radio audience know that they're totally blind and identical twins.
That's right, yeah.
And I'll always tease, I says, teasing me. I says, "Who's the good-looking one?" You know, and they'll both raise their hands. You know? They are beautiful guys.
Good guys, yeah. Really,
oh
yes, nice guys,
beautiful guys. It's great business we're in. No
Absolutely.
Kidding.
So thanks very much for having us.
Well, anyway,
today.
Before we go, I'd like to you sign off with a little poem. I hope your radio audience enjoys this show. If they didn't, this is Candy Candido saying, "I'm feeling mighty low." Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.